Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the RHC Technical Assistance National Teleconference. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Bill Finnerfrock. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. And as she said, my name is Bill Finnerfrock. I'm the executive director of the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, and I will be the speaker for today's call. I want to welcome everyone to the presentation on electronic health record incentives that were included in the economic stimulus bill. Today's program is scheduled for an hour. The first 45 minutes will be devoted to my presentation, followed by about 15 minutes for question and answer. Prior to the start of my presentation, however, we will have a brief presentation by the Office of Rural Health Policy on a project that they are working on that they wanted to get some information out to you. The purpose of today's call is to provide rural health clinics with valuable technical assistance and RHC-specific information. Today's call is the 30th in our series, which began in 2004, and during that time, over 6,200 individuals have participated on the bi-monthly national teleconferences. As you know, there is no charge to participate in this series, and we encourage you to refer others who might benefit from this series to sign up to receive announcements regarding dates, topics, and speaker presentations at www.ruralhealth.hrsa.gov/RHC, and you can go there to download the slides for today's presentation if you did not receive them or if you've misplaced them. At the conclusion, as I said, we will have a question and answer period, and we ask that you please identify yourself by name and the state that you're calling from, just so that we get a sense of the geographic distribution of where folks are calling in from. As I mentioned, we have a short presentation here, some comments from the Office of Rural Health Policy, from Nancy Egbert with the office, who wanted to talk to you about a project they're working on. So, Nancy, please talk to the folks and let them know what's going on.
All right, great. Thanks, Bill, for giving me a little few minutes to talk to everyone about the pharmacy, the Patient Safety and Clinical Pharmacy Services Collaborative. HRSA started this last year. I've been involved. Our office has been involved. We've contributed money, and basically we want to try to recruit rural teams. So I'm going to give you a very brief summary of what the collaborative's about and try to encourage you to think about enrolling. And the slide deck that I provided will give you additional information, including websites. So let's start. First of all, you'll notice that Krista Pedley's name is on this PowerPoint, and her contact information is at the end. And she's one of the leaders of the leaders of the collaborative. So if you have any questions afterwards, you can give her contact her, or you can also contact me.
But I'm not sure that the slides have actually gotten delivered yet, so they may not get out until after the call is over.
Okay. That's okay. I'm actually not going to go through every slide. The slides were just a reference. I'm just going to take a few choice ones just to try to give you a flavor of what we've been doing for almost a year. This collaborative, I will say, is groundbreaking. No one's ever done a clinical pharmacy services collaborative before. IHI is really interested in, you know, the outcomes, and we're learning a lot. We've had 68 teams. 20% of those teams are coming from rural, and these are multi-organization, multidisciplinary teams, and they represent the care continuum for the patient. So, for example, it might be a hospital in a rural area. It might be a hospital, primary care site, such as a rural clinic or an FQHC. The primary care home has to be the main applicant. So that's why the rural health clinics are so important, because obviously critical access hospitals don't always have, a primary care clinic attached to them. So you're really important as potential participants in this. So what is a collaborative? This collaborative is designed to improve patient safety and improve health outcomes through the integration of clinical pharmacy services. And there's several slides that define clinical pharmacy services, so I won't really go over that. But I'll just say that you don't necessarily have to have a pharmacist on site. But a relationship with a pharmacist would be ideal. Why are we doing this? Well, the most talked about or very common book around this was the report that IOM put out was To Err Is Human, and that found that medication errors are the most common cause of patient safety issues. They injure 1.5 million people annually, and they cost billions. So it's a really important issue, and we decided to try to tackle it. As I said before, the cornerstone of this collaborative is the clinical patient or the clinical pharmacy services, and those are services that are very patient-centered. They promote the appropriate selection and utilization of medications to optimize the patient experience. And I talked a little bit about the teams. We've had teams in 37 states. They're all over the United States, and including two teams that came from Puerto Rico. So why am I talking to you about it now? We just finished the third learning session of the first collaborative, and we're getting ready to talk about and start the next collaborative, which will start in this fall. So the participation package or the application is coming out this week, and I just wanted you to be aware of it and know how to access it in case you're interested or at least you want more information. Essentially, the timeline will be the applications come out this week. They'll be due at the end of July. You'll be expected to form a team. Again, you know, it's a multi-organizational team, including, of course, this medical care home. And there will be some pre-work that will happen before the first learning session, which will be in September, October. The cool thing that we're going to do this year is we're going to have the fourth learning session for the first collaborative and the first session for the second collaborative at the same time. So it'll really give you a chance to hear what teams have been doing. It's been very, very exciting. I think teams have learned a lot, and we're really looking forward to have some more rural clinics participate. And with that, I just want to point out that there are the websites at the end, and the participation package is on the patient safety, the one with the patient safety website. So I'm going to turn it back over to Bill, and thank you very much again.
Thanks, Nancy. And if you haven't gotten those slides, you will within relatively short period of time here, and it'll have all the information that Nancy was referencing where you can go to follow up if you have questions, et cetera, on this initiative. And I want to reiterate, I think this is something that would be good for rural health clinics to take a look at and consider participating in terms of bringing some of this stuff to your patients. Thank you, Nancy. Now, with our regularly scheduled presentation, it's on the electronic health record incentive payments that are available as a result of the economic stimulus package, or I should say will be available, beginning in 2011. That's 2011. There will be incentive payments available for a variety of providers, including rural health clinics, community health centers, FQHCs, critical access hospitals, and physicians for what is defined as the meaningful use of a certified electronic health record system. Under the Medicare portion of the incentive program, only physicians and hospitals are eligible to receive payments. Rural health clinics, as a specific entity under Medicare, would not be eligible for incentive payments. Physicians, nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, rural health clinics, FQHCs, and some physician assistants are eligible for electronic health record incentive payments under the Medicaid program. What I'd like to do is go through and highlight and outline some of the criteria that you will need to meet in order to be eligible for those incentive payments. I want to reiterate, and this is on the will be on the third slide in, that you have to be a meaningful user of a certified electronic health record system. It's not based upon when you purchased the system. A lot of folks have contacted me and said, well, we purchased our electronic health record or we already have a system. Does that mean that we're not eligible for the incentive payments? And the answer is that it is not based on when you bought the system. So the fact that you may already have an electronic health record system in place and you're currently using it does not prohibit you from obtaining the incentive payments because those are for meaningful use of a certified system. Now, the problem that folks who have a system now may encounter is whether or not the system you have today will meet the certification standards that will be in place by 2011. Those certification standards are going to change, and there will be new certification standards. So the issue isn't when you purchase the system, but rather your ability to demonstrate that your system meets the certification standards. For physicians who are not working in rural health clinics, they must choose whether to receive a Medicare incentive payment or a Medicaid incentive payment, but you cannot get both. For hospital-based physicians also are not eligible. Now, we are expecting that if you are a rural health clinic that is part of a hospital, you are a provider-based rural health clinic, the incentive payments will flow through the hospital's incentive payments rather than for you individually as a rural health clinic. So just as hospital-based physicians are not eligible, we are anticipating that the hospital-based rural health clinics and the providers who work in those rural health clinics will not be eligible individually for the EHR incentive, that it is that you will be operating under the hospital system and therefore part of the hospital's incentive payment process, and I will go into that in a little bit. But right now, what they have defined and identified as hospital-based physicians are anesthesiologists, pathologists, and emergency medicine physicians, and then the secretary has the authority to identify other providers as hospital-based that would then be ineligible for a separate incentive payment. And that's where we would anticipate that the rural health clinics that are provider-based will see the money flow into the hospital and then into the rural health clinic through the hospital. For physicians who are eligible for the Medicare payments, those payments will flow either on a quarterly basis or at an end-of-year lump sum basis as long as they can identify that they are meaningful users of a certified EHR system. The amount of the payment will be based on their allowed charges. So if there are practices here who are not listening in, who are not part of a rural health clinic, or you may have some practices if you're in a system that are RHCs, some that are not RHCs, your physicians would be eligible for individual Medicare incentive payments. In order to be considered certified, that means that it is a qualified electronic health record that meets the standards that will be, and I want to emphasize, will be adopted by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, that are applicable to the type of record involved, such as an ambulatory electronic health record for office-based physicians. Now, we don't know even at this point who the standard-setting organization will be, whether they will use one of the existing private organizations. One, for example, is CCHIT, which is a health information technology certification organization, or whether the government will set up its own independent government-based certifying entity for purposes of evaluating the electronic health records and certifying them. I want to emphasize this is an absolutely critical point because I've had communications and conversations with many folks who have been approached by vendors who said, well, by our system, we're certified. And that is probably true, that they are certified meeting the existing certification standards in place in 2009. But those certification standards, as I said, will change. I use the analogy for those of you who are old enough to remember back in the 80s, there used to be two types of tapes available if you wanted to use your VCR. We had beta and we had VHS. And I unfortunately was somebody who bought a beta tape, and then they came out and said, we're not going to have beta anymore, we're only going to make VHS tapes. And so I had a piece of equipment that was essentially meaningless because I couldn't buy a tape anymore that would work in the VCR that I had purchased. You don't want to buy beta in a VHS world. And I would just caution people to be very deliberate in making a decision on either if you have not yet purchased an EHR or if you already have one, to work very closely with your vendors to ensure that your vendor is going to be able to meet the certification standards that are going to be coming down in the next year. One of the key components of those new certification requirements will be that your system will have to be interoperable. That means that your EHR is going to have to be able to talk to all other EHRs around the country, so that if you had a patient that went to a different state, different region of the country, had to be admitted to the hospital, that hospital wanted to have access to your electronic health records so that they could see what was going on, that the system that you have was accessible by that provider in the other part of the country because it was interoperable. There are currently no standards for the interoperability function of an EHR, so that's why I tell people there's no guarantee that any existing system will be able to meet the certification standards because we don't know what the interoperability requirements will be. In addition, in order to be certified, your system is going to have an e-prescribing component. If you don't currently have an e-prescribing component to your EHR, then you're going to need to look to either add that through the certification process or purchase a system that has e-prescribing, again, as part of this certification process. Next, once you've determined that your system is certified and you meet the certification criteria, all entities that seek to obtain the EHR incentive payments will have to demonstrate that they are meaningful users of the EHR system. What the statute says is the eligible professional demonstrates to the satisfaction of the secretary during the period of time, so beginning in 2011, the professional is using certified EHR technology in a meaningful manner, which, as I mentioned, shall include the use of electronic prescribing. The eligible professional has to demonstrate to the satisfaction that during such period of certified EHR use, that you're connected in a manner that provides for the electronic exchange of health information. This is the interoperability provision I was talking about, to improve the quality of healthcare, such as promoting care coordination. Now, there will be additional criteria that will be developed and published by the secretary, and we anticipate that those will be done in a proposed rulemaking that will allow the community an opportunity to comment on the standards so that there will be a chance, we will know ahead of time what it will mean to be a meaningful user of the EHR system that has met your certification. So you have to have a system that is certified, and you have to demonstrate that you are a meaningful user of that system in order to be eligible for the incentives. Physicians who are not in rural health clinics and seek to get the Medicare incentive payments will be eligible also for a 10% bonus payment if their practice is located in a health professional shortage area. So now we're going to look at what the actual dollar values of the incentive payments are. There are incentive payments, we'll get into there are also disincentives or penalties that will be paid if you do not adopt an EHR by a specific time period. Beginning in 2011, for physicians who are opting for the Medicare incentive payment, they would be eligible for up to a maximum of $18,000 in incentive payments per physician through the Medicare program for the meaningful use of a certified EHR. As I mentioned, these payments can be paid either quarterly or in a lump sum basis at the end of the calendar year, in this case 2011. So you could get $18,000 per physician beginning in 2011. If you don't first start using until 2012, in other words, you've got your EHR, but you don't start using it until 2012, you can get $18,000. If you're starting your process in 2012, you can get $18,000 for that year. If 2012 is your second year, so you started in 2011, now it's 2012, you're in your second year of EHR use, you get $12,000 your second year. And the amount of the incentive declines over the next several years till 2015, when you would be eligible for $2,000 in 2015 if you started in 2011. If you don't start until 2012, you only get incentive payments for 4 years. So you're encouraged to be what they refer to as an early adopter. the practices or the physicians who adopt in 2011 will get the maximum amount of incentive payments over the five-year period through which they're available. And it goes from $18,000 the first year, $12,000 the second, $8,000 the third, $4,000 the fourth, and $2,000 the fifth. But if you don't start until 2012, you only get 4 years, 18, 12, 8, and 4. You lose out on that last $2,000 in that final year. If you do not begin using EHR by 2015, then you can be subject to a reduction in your Medicare payments unless you can demonstrate to the secretary that doing so would represent a hardship to the provider. We don't know what those criteria for hardship will be, but you are strongly encouraged to start using an EHR by 2015. If you do not start using an EHR by 2015, you will be subject to a reduction in your Medicare payments starting in 2015. In 2015, if you do not demonstrate meaningful use of a certified EHR, then you would only get 99% of what you would have otherwise been eligible for from Medicare. By 2016, that would drop. You'd only get 98%. 2017, 97%. 2018, 96%, and would hold at 96% until you demonstrated meaningful use of an EHR. And if you never use EHR or do not qualify for the hardship, you're only going to get 96% of what you were eligible for under Medicare. For hospitals, and as I mentioned, this is where a significant number of the provider-based rural health clinics will see their benefit from the EHR incentive program. Beginning in 2011, hospitals and critical access hospitals are eligible for Medicare incentive payments for the meaningful use of a certified EHR system. And again, those meaningful use and certification standards will be out and published and available so that you'll know what you have to do. If your hospital, this is not a critical access hospital, the law makes a distinction between a hospital and a critical access hospital. So what I'm about to talk about right now is only for the hospital would receive an incentive payment that is the sum of a base amount of $2 million plus $200 per discharge above the threshold level of 1,149 discharges. So every hospital in America that is not a critical access hospital will get, beginning in 2011, will get $2 million if they can demonstrate that they are using a certified, meaningful user of a certified EHR system. And then an additional $200 per discharge above the threshold level of 1,149 discharges. So every hospital will get that $2 million plus. If you are a critical access hospital, you will have to go through a calculation that will be hospital specific, and I want to encourage the critical access hospital community to review the language here and speak with your accounting professionals to determine how you will qualify and the amounts that you can potentially qualify for as a critical access hospital. The reason the critical access hospitals are being treated differently is that you are already reimbursed 101% of your cost. The assumption is that the purchase of an EHR system is an allowable cost and therefore is being reimbursed already to the hospital through your cost reporting methodology. But there was a recognition that some of those costs may not be fully captured and there may be a cash flow issue. So the secretary under the statute is charged with computing reasonable costs through an expense methodology in a single payment year and using a depreciation method over a period of years, which shall include costs from previous cost reporting periods to the extent that you have not fully depreciated your EHR costs. And we're getting into a very technical area here, and that's why I'm encouraging you to work with your accountants for your hospital, your critical access hospital, to see exactly how this works. I am not an accountant. I can give you the words, but I can't explain what they mean because you don't want me going into an accounting area. but you are eligible as a critical access hospital for EHR incentive payments if you meet the accounting requirements that are laid out in the statute. And again, as with hospital REACs who are part of hospitals, the EHR incentive, the assumption is that those will flow through to the REAC that is affiliated with a critical access hospital as well. What I'd like to do is, well, in no case will you get any kind of an incentive payment for the hospitals or the critical access hospitals, again, after 2015, and in no case will you be eligible for those incentive payments after that period of time. So you want to start looking at the accounting principles that are available for you as a critical access hospital and with regard to the cost reporting periods and how you are to do those depreciations over the next several years, beginning in 2011. But if you are a meaningful user, you know, you are eligible whether you're a hospital, a critical access hospital, or the physician. If you are not a meaningful user, as I said, by 2015, you are subject to a penalty. As you know, those of you who are with a critical access hospital, you currently are receiving 101% of your cost as a CAH for Medicare patients. If you do not adopt EHR by 2015, that amount would drop to 100.66%. In 2016, if you're not a meaningful user of a certified EHR, that would drop to 100.33%. And for fiscal year 2017 and beyond, if you fail to adopt an EHR, you will only get 100% of your Medicare costs. So you will be penalized if you fail to adopt an EHR system by virtue of a reduction in your Medicare payments. As I mentioned at the outset, there are separate payments for the Medicaid program, and here's where the REAC-specific provisions come into play. EHR incentive payments through Medicare are available to physicians, nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, rural health clinics, federally qualified health centers, and some physician assistants who work in rural health clinics. In order for a practitioner or provider to be eligible for the Medicaid incentive, if you are a physician, nurse practitioner, nurse midwife, not working in a rural health clinic, you must demonstrate that 30% of your patient visits are for Medicaid patients. So if you are a physician, nurse practitioner, nurse midwife, you know, outside of a rural health clinic, your threshold test is that 30% of your patients must be Medicaid. If you are a rural health clinic or a federally qualified health center, you can receive bonus payments through your physicians, NPs, nurse practitioners, or physician assistants if your rural health clinic is PA-led. Only in the case of the PA, it must be what the law refers to as a PA-led rural health clinic. Otherwise, you're all the other providers are eligible regardless of who owns the clinic, but the clinic must be PA-led. For RHCs and FQHCs, the threshold standard is you have to demonstrate that at least 30% of your patients, the volume is attributable to what the law refers to as a needy individual. So it is a different threshold than the other Medicaid providers, the non-RHC, non-FQHC, who have to demonstrate that 30% of their patients are Medicaid. For the RHC and the FQHC community, the definition is a needy individual. And the statute defines a needy individual as someone who is receiving assistance under the Medicaid program, someone who is receiving assistance under the SCHIP or the State Children's Health Insurance Program, someone who is receiving care for which you were not compensated, so your clinic did not receive any compensation, or someone for whom charges are reduced by your clinic on a sliding scale basis based on the individual's ability to pay. So you look at the aggregate amount of those, your Medicaid, your SCHIP, your uncompensated care, and your sliding fee scale, and if 30% of your patients add up to at least 30% when you combine those, then you are eligible for the Medicaid incentive payment. So if you look at a typical rural health clinic, for example, according to the survey data, 20 to 25% of an RHC's patients would be Medicaid. You might have another 5% that are SCHIP. You might have another 5% that are either uncompensated care or sliding fee, which would give you a total of 35% of your patients fall into those categories, or 40% fall into those categories. You would be eligible for the EHR incentive payment as a rural health clinic. So as long as you meet that threshold test. Now, what is it that you can receive if you demonstrate that you meet that threshold test? You can receive in an amount not in excess of 85% of the net average allowable cost for certified EHR technology, including support services, maintenance, and training for the adoption and operation of such technology. It does not say when those costs have to be incurred. So if you've already purchased an EHR system, you want to have your documentation of what your costs were for the purchase of the system, as well as any costs that you incur for the maintenance of that system or the training of your staff, and begin accounting and being able to demonstrate those costs so that in 2011, when the incentive payments start to kick in, you have all of those costs available and you can recoup up to 85% of the net average allowable cost. So if, let's say, your costs were $100,000 over the course of the incentive program, you can recover $85,000 of that $100,000 outlay. Under the statute, the term average allowable cost means the average cost for the purchase and initial implementation or upgrade. So if you already have a system but you have to upgrade it in order to add a function to make it interoperable, or to add an e-prescribing, those would be allowable costs because that's part of an upgrade. And support services, as I said, including the training. And that's a critical component. What kind of training costs did you incur as a rural health clinic to educate your staff on the use of this system? In terms of what it is that you are would then be eligible for, your net average allowable cost under this section for the first year of payment could not exceed $25,000. So if your cost were $85,000, you would get your first year, you would get $25,000 of that back because you haven't exceeded the $85,000 threshold. If your total cost were $100,000. The next year you would get $10,000, the following year $10,000, the following year $10,000, and the following year $10,000. You can get 5 years of incentive payments, $25,000 for the first year, $10,000 for each of the next 4 years, for a total of $65,000 in recoupment. And again, this is per provider. So if you have a physician and a nurse practitioner in your RHC, you could, in theory, you can get $65,000 per provider up to 85% of your total allowable cost. So in the case of a clinic that has a physician and a nurse practitioner, if your outlays were a total of $100,000, you're capped at $85,000, you'd get $65,000 for your physician. The remaining $20,000 could be recouped through your nurse practitioner or vice versa, so you can get up to your $85,000 total, or 85% of your total allowable cost. So you need to know that you're calculating this on a per-provider basis. Your aggregate cap is 85% of your total allowable cost, but it is the incentive payments themselves are calculated per provider within the RHC. Now, the one confusing aspect of this is what happens with regard to physician assistants. We went through a lengthy period of discussion and argument with the Congress over this. The initial language did not include physician assistants in the incentive payment program. We argued that they should be fully included. Unfortunately, we were not completely successful, but the language does allow incentive payments to be available if the clinic is what the statute refers to as PA-led. We don't know. The statute does not define that At a minimum, we believe it would be a clinic that is owned by a physician assistant, and there are about 3 or 4% of the RHCs in the United States are PA-owned. But beyond that, we don't know if it means that if the PA is the dominant provider, in other words, that your physician assistant is there full-time and your physician is only there part-time, how that would work, if that would be defined as a PA-led clinic. We don't know that. That's one of the issues that will have to get resolved here in the next next 12 months. But you are eligible. Physician assistant-led clinics are eligible for these EHR incentive payments. In no case will Medicaid make incentive payments beyond 2021. So there will an opportunity to get these incentive payments up until 2021 through the Medicaid program for your RHC, but it will cease after 2021. Unlike the physician payments, if you start your first year, you would get the $25,000, whether that's 2011 or 2012 or 2013. You have a longer period of time to make the decision and to get the incentive period when it's payments when it starts. But in no case will you get more than incentive payments for more than 5 years, or no later than 2021 if that comes sooner. So if you didn't start until 2018, and then you'd only get 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021, you would lose out on that fifth year because it absolutely ends in 2021. I want to emphasize that there is no double dipping permissible, that a provider cannot get incentive payments from both Medicare and Medicaid. And you will not be able to get hospital incentive payments for the provider. So if your clinic is in a hospital, we're not anticipating that. Although it's not spelled out in the legislation, we would not anticipate that RHCs that are part of hospitals or critical access hospitals would get separate payments by being RHCs if you are a part of a hospital or a critical access hospital. Again, that would be considered to be double dipping. But there is money out there. There is money that will be available beginning in 2011 for RHCs. And I want to encourage you all to take advantage of the resources that are going to be out there and available. My cautionary note, as I've said on a couple of occasions, is make sure that the system that you're going to buy meets the certification standards, and we will get information out to you as soon as those standards are developed and made public. We will share those with the RHC community. But, you know, if you have a system now, it is one that you purchased from a vendor, I would encourage you to contact your vendor. Find out what steps they are taking, what steps they will take to ensure that whatever system you, if you have their system, that it will be able to meet those certification standards. And whatever assurances or guarantees, whether they be a financial incentive or financial guarantee, contractual guarantee, that you obtain those from your vendors, because the last thing that you want, as I mentioned earlier, is to have bought a beta when VHS becomes the standard. I'd be happy to take the rest of the time for questions if I can't answer whatever questions you may have about the incentive program that's available. Operator, if you want to go ahead and give the instructions, we'll open up the phone line and take questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Please keep in mind if you're using a speakerphone to make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 at this time to ask a question. We'll take our first question. Caller, please go ahead.
Go ahead, caller.
I have a couple questions. The first one is the PA-led. I just want to make sure that I understand that completely. The PAs will only receive payment if they're working at a organization that is run and organized by physician's assistants?
Well, it's. I mean, I think your question is similar to the ones we've raised. They came back and said, we will allow the incentive payments if it is a PA-led clinic. And we said, what does that mean? And they didn't provide us with any additional information. So we're going to have to try and get that from the Secretary in terms of additional clarification. I think at a minimum, it means a clinic that is owned by a physician assistant, a rural health clinic that is owned by a physician assistant. Anything more than that at this point would be speculation, although it would be our hope that clinics where a physician assistant is the dominant or most in terms of the hours worked would be qualified as a PA-led clinic, but we don't know the answer to that. Can you tell us where you're from, caller?
Hood River, Oregon.
Okay. And you had another question?
Yes, actually, the two more, dental. You haven't mentioned anything about whether dental hygienists, which are similar to nurses and nurse practitioners in a medical practice, has there been any clarification on dental EMRs and how they qualify for this?
No, there are dental EMR. There's a dental component to the EMR system. I didn't go into that because we weren't focused on that.
Okay.
And I have not seen any additional clarification on those standards.
Okay, and then my final question is, we have several physicians, but very few of them are full-time. Is it possible for us to roll up and have a cumulative number of FTE and use that? So we employ 13 people, but when you roll up all of their time together, it's really only about 7 FTE?
I think that's going to be one of the questions, again, that we'll have to get clarification for. There is some language that makes reference to works predominantly in a rural health clinic, and it's not clear what that means and whether or not, I think the kind of circumstance you describe is something that we'll want to try and get clarified during the rulemaking process here as to how that will be calculated. And I think your example of 13 individuals cumulatively would relate to 7 FTEs would be a good example of how are we exactly going to calculate this.
And do you have a timeline for this rulemaking process and when the applications will actually be released?
Well, we don't. It won't be an application. What it will be is an incentive payment that will flow through either your cost report as an RHC, it's a pass-through at the end of the year and some probably as part of your RHC reconciliation, year-end reconciliation, or for the physicians, it'll be linked to their fee schedule payments for those that bill through the fee schedule. And there will be it will be based, as we understand it, on code. So there will be some code processing as the claims are going in that you will have to identify that will send the message that you are a meaningful user of a certified EHR. So it will not be an application process. You will identify, as best we can figure, you'll identify the EHR system that you are using. That will be deemed, you know, assuming they will have a list of those that are certified, and then you will demonstrate through your claims filing and your cost report that you are a meaningful user, and our expectation is that it'll be through some type of an end-of-year reconciliation for the RHCs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Caller, go ahead if you can identify who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Bill Russell calling from Bandon, Oregon. I got the impression that if you start being a meaningful user in 2013, you get nothing. Is that correct?
If you are on the physician side, if you're on the physician seeking Medicare incentive payments and you are initially adopting and using in 2013, you would get an incentive payment, but the value of that would be, I think it's at the $8,000 level if you don't start first using till 2013. So if you first start using in 2011, you get $18,000 and then ratchet down. If you don't start till 2013, you start out at the $8,000 level, and then you would only get $8,000, $4,000, and $2,000. For the RHC, it works different than that. There is no incentive or disincentive as to when you first start. So as an RHC, if you didn't start till 2013, you'd get the full $25,000, then $10,000, $10,000, $10,000, and $10,000 over the five-year period because there it ends in 2021, so you wouldn't have exceeded the 2021, and you had gotten the full five-year window of opportunity within that time frame.
Okay, thanks. I had one other question. Actually, I'm working with a future RHC. They're not yet certified, but we also have an issue in our town about the hospital payment. That 1,149 discharges, that's over what period of time?
A year, 12
over
months.
Over that year.
Yeah, over that year. So if you're seeking an incentive payment for 2011, they would look at the discharges during 2011.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, that is star one at this time to ask a question. Additionally, please state your name and location before posing your question. We'll move on to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Yes, this is Ron Rankoff, Medical Group. How are you today?
Good. Where are you, Ron, where are you located?
Colville, Washington.
Okay.
I'm going to go right back to the very start. And the question here is only physicians are eligible for Medicare incentives, and that's physicians not practicing in a rural health clinic, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so rural health clinics can just take that one away. So rural health clinics are only eligible for the Medicaid portion.
Yes, we would like to see that change. We've encouraged Congress to provide an opportunity for RHCs to get incentive payments through either Medicare or Medicaid in the same way that physicians do. But as part of the economic stimulus, they created a two parallel processes, one for Medicaid and one for Medicare.
Okay, so the Medicaid has that 30% needy component.
Right.
Those are the numbers that we need to concentrate on to find out whether we're eligible for this program then, right?
Originally, they wanted it to be Medicaid for the RHCs, and we collaborated with the FQHCs to give us a broader definition for purposes of qualifying so that it's the needy definition rather than straight Medicaid.
So okay, very good. Thank you.
RHCs to qualify.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I'm calling from Pine Medical Group in Fremont, Michigan.
Great.
We are a multi-specialty practice, but we're an RHC, and I was wondering, do our specialists qualify for the incentives?
Are your specialists are part of your RHC or not?
As I understand it, just the family practice is RHC, but we're a multi-specialty group.
Your specialists, as I read it, should qualify for the incentive payments because they're billing off of the fee schedule, and their payments will flow through the fee schedule, and they would qualify under that. The first set of incentive under the Medicare, the 18, 12, 8, 4, and 2 schedule that I mentioned at the early part of my presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move to our next question.
Hi, this is Heather calling from North Coast Family Health Center in Fort Bragg, California.
Okay.
And that last question just kind of threw me a little bit, so let me see if I can regather my thoughts. We're a provider-based rural health clinic associated with a critical access hospital. So is it correct that we would either need to go through that pathway, the critical access, or the Medi-Cal if we met the 30% needy?
Say your question again. I'm not sure if I understood it.
Okay. We're a provider-based rural health clinic.
Right. Part of a critical access hospital.
Yeah. And the Medicare reimbursement that would come through the cost report.
Medicaid.
Sorry?
Medicaid or Medicare?
I had thought it was Medicare that came through the critical access.
Right. The critical access is linked to your Medicare. Your RHC is linked through Medicaid. Potentially. Because you're a part of the critical access hospital will have an accounting process through your Medicare cost report for determining whether or how much you would qualify for as an EHR incentive payment from Medicare. Your rural health clinic will, or our expectation is, and again, we don't have the details on this, because you are a provider-based part, your rural health clinic is provider-based to the critical access hospital, the expectation is that the cost for anything of the RHC is flowing through the parent entity.
Mm-hmm.
Parent entity is getting an incentive payment for a system that the RHC is using because they're provider-based. The RHC would not be eligible because that would be essentially double-dipping. The RHC would be getting money. The parent would be getting money for essentially the same system because you should all be operating under a uniform EHR because it's a provider-based clinic to the CAH.
Okay. So we would go only through the critical access cost report process.
That's the way it would read to me. Now, again, we don't have the details. It's conceivable that they could come out with something that would surprise us. But I think if you look at the way that they structured the incentive payments, that anybody who is working through the hospital, and the expectation is that the hospital is purchasing the EHR system, or the critical access hospital, is purchasing the EHR system that everyone in their system is using, then individuals within that system would not be separately eligible for an incentive payment because it's the CAH or the hospital that is incurring the cost for the EHR, not the individual parts of the system.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello, my name is Shelton Evans, calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was calling just trying to inquire whether or not the Medicaid agencies have the ability to set, I guess, penalties for non-use of EHR similar to Medicare.
The statute does not provide for that, so it does not indicate a disincentive through Medicaid or any kind of a penalty through Medicaid, but there would be the potential through the Medicare for some type of failure to use. So you may not suffer a penalty on Medicaid, but you could suffer a penalty on Medicare for failure to use. There's no need to have a double penalty. In other words, I think the feeling is we've created a disincentive on the Medicare side of it. We're not going to do a double whack on you on the Medicaid side of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
We'll take our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hey, caller.
Caller, your line is open. Hearing no response, we'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Diane from Missouri.
Hi, Diane.
And I'm calling. I had trouble printing the slides for the presentation. I was wondering if you could repeat the website.
Sure. If you go to www.ruralhealth, one word, RURALHEALTH, .hrsa.gov/RHC, you should see the slides are up. And just so you know, that is where we will also, the transcript and recording of this call will be available probably in a week or so for those of you who want to go back and review the transcript or listen to the call again.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Yes, Doug Bischoff, Lovemore Clinic in Moorefield, West Virginia.
Hi. Go ahead.
My question is, we've had an EMR for 3 years, fully functional for the whole time, and, of course, over that period of time, we've received payments or received credits through a cost report. My question is, do we still receive an incentive, and if so, do we still receive an incentive and report that on a cost report again, or how do we get that?
You're strictly a rural health clinic?
Yes, community-owned rural health clinic.
Okay. Unlike the CAH, where they are already getting 101% of their cost, and the assumption is that most of the CAHs, to the extent that they have or will purchase an EHR, would get those through some type of a fully reimbursable or a depreciation process on their cost report because there's no cap. For the RHC communities, particularly the independent RHCs, because you operate under a cap, the expectation is that you're not really getting your full cost reimbursement. So at this point, there has been no discussion about any kind of discounting or taking away of a part of the incentive because you may have incorporated part of those costs into your cost report. At this point, the way the language is written, you would get the incentive payment regardless of whether or not a portion of that may have occurred in your cost report. Now, that could change, again, in whatever rules they come out with, but at this point, the statute treats rural health clinics differently than critical access hospitals, even though you both are paid off of a cost report. But because RHCs independents have a cap, we know that they're not getting fully reimbursed for all of their costs.
Okay, thank you.
We'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
This is Allison in Arizona. My question is about the critical access hospital. Currently,
in their cost report that they only get the reimbursement related to the proportion of Medicare patients that they serve, but they're having to invest in 100% in electronic health records that also serve their Medicaid patients and their non-reimbursable payment patients, as well as Medicare. Yet they only can report or get reimbursed for the proportion of Medicare patients. Does that mean that the cost come 2011 will continue only to get the Medicare reimbursement, even though they're spending the funds for electronic health records that serve their entire patient population?
I don't know the answer to that question. Mute your phone because we're getting a lot of bleed over from background noise there. I don't know the answer to your question. The issue of how to deal with the critical access hospitals was a very contentious one, and as you point out on your cost report, you're really only capturing that portion of your costs associated with your Medicare patients, even though the cost to your system is for all of your patients. That is something that will probably have to be worked out through the rulemaking process or the guidance process as to how that's going to work. I think the accounting principles that are laid out are an effort to try and help the critical access hospitals reduce or recoup some of those other costs. The extent to which they will, I don't know. As I said, I'm not an accounting person. I can't make heads or tails out of the way those are written. I suspect someone with an accounting background could sit and calculate for someone what its actual value is. But I think the questions and the points you raise were part of the discussion and part of the issue. And why there was at least some willingness to provide an incentive payment for critical access hospitals, because there were those who felt that there should be no incentive payment for the critical access hospitals since they were getting 101% of cost, albeit only for the portion of their costs associated with Medicare. So I don't know the answer to your question. Next question.
We'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
This is Jim Wayne calling from St. Francis in Escanaba, Michigan. Just a point of clarification. We operate provider-based rural health clinics, but we are not a critical access hospital. So if I understand correctly, our only option at this point in time would be to access through the hospital the Medicare program, not the Medicaid. Is that correct?
That would be the way I would read it. That you're going to get, your hospital is going to get $2 million plus $200 per discharge over the 1,149 threshold, and that money is the incentive payment that the hospital would get. It would not be an additional amount available because you had a rural health clinic.
Okay. Now, but if we happen to have practices that were not designated as rural health but still owned by the hospital, then those would be eligible for the
Are those additional practices provider-based, or are they just having to be hospital-owned?
Just have to be hospital-owned.
My guess would be that those would be eligible because they're not considered provider-based. But once you are provider-based, as you know, one of the criteria for being provider-based is that the clinic is fully integrated into the operations of the parent hospital and operated as if it is a department of the hospital. Since it's operated as if it's a department of the hospital, the system, what the hospital purchases, would be available to the RHC. Because those other practices are not required to be fully integrated, I would think that there would be an opportunity. Now, it will hinge on, as I mentioned, the secretary has the authority to define or classify other physicians as being hospital-based. A lot may depend on how much time they're spending in the hospital, how much of the work is occurring in the hospital versus outside of the hospital. So I don't know that it's an absolute given, but I think that there is a possibility that those other physicians would be eligible for incentive payments separate and distinct from the hospital.
Okay, thank you.
We'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Here we go. Operator, how many do we have in the queue?
We have two questions left.
Okay, why don't we take those, and then that'll have to be it.
Okay. Caller, please go ahead.
This is Kevin from Otsego Memorial Hospital in Gaylord, Michigan. And we are a provider-based RHC. And one of the assumptions that you mentioned is that the systems would be a shared system for the hospital and for the rural health clinics.
Correct.
In our case, we have two separate systems. I'm just wondering how does that play into this particular equation?
Well, I would question, how is it that you're provider-based if you're not demonstrating you're fully integrated and you're operating on a separate system? I would think that you would, your provider-based designation would be put into question if you're not on a fully integrated system with the hospital.
We are doing some things to make it the systems interoperable. We're going to put some HL7 interfaces in between the two to share demographic information, share lab results, X-ray, and so on.
But if you're not already doing that, I would think that how did you get provider-based status if you weren't able to demonstrate that at this point?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure why that wasn't taken into account at that time.
I think you're an anomalous situation, I believe, because inherent in being provider-based, as I said, is that you're supposed to demonstrate that you're fully integrated financially, clinically, medically with the parent hospital, and you're operated as if you were a department. So, I mean, it would be as if I went to the ER within the hospital, and they were not at all, even though they're physically located within the four walls of the hospital, not at all integrated, that would be, it's counterintuitive and counter to the way that it's supposed to operate. So I don't have an answer to your question because I think you're an outlier, and I'm not sure how I would encourage you to get integrated as much as possible so that someone doesn't question why you're provider-based.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll take our final question. Caller, please go ahead.
Yes, hello. This is Amy from Kansas.
Hi, Amy.
Hello. Hey, we are an independent RHC with less than 30% needy. So does that mean that we are not eligible for any incentives?
I would say that yes. How are you sure you've calculated your needy, or how are you calculating your needy?
Yes, we are a largely Medicare population, but not a large Medicaid population.
Right. What about SCHIP or uninsured or uncompensated care?
Not 30%, no.
Okay. When you add it all up, you don't reach a 30% threshold?
No, we do not.
This is your situation, is the point that we've made to the Congress, which is that we have many RHCs that will reach the 30% threshold, but in a rural community it would not be unusual to have a disproportionately high percentage of Medicare given the demographics of a rural community, particularly relative to the Medicaid population. So we have asked Congress to go back and see if we cannot create an incentive payment through the Medicare side of the program parallel to what is available through Medicaid, but that will require additional legislation that's not there. So if you don't meet the 30% threshold, then you would not be eligible.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Great. That concludes. I want to thank all of you who asked questions today and who listened in. And I also want to thank the Office of Rural Health Policy, Nancy Egbert. As I said, you will get the slides for the project she was talking about, the pharmacy project she was talking about. A transcript of today's call and a recording of the call should be available in about a week. We will send out a notice indicating its availability. It will be on the Rural Health Policy website address I gave you earlier. Our next call will be in 2 months. It is tentatively planned for information on a new initiative out of the federal government and around the states called a Teen Screen Program, which is how to do a better job of screening for depression amongst your teen patients. We'll get information on that and the slides out prior to that call and the date and the firming of that. Today's call, as I said, was our 30th in the series, and we appreciate everyone who's participated, and in particular the Office of Rural Health Policy, who sponsors this series and makes it available to you free of charge. Thank you for your participation, and we look forward to having you on the line for our next call in July. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's call. Thank you for your participation.